This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When we experience trauma as children, whether it's the stress of an abusive parent, divorce, substance abuse, or the effects of poverty, do those traumatic events affect our lives even when we're grown up? Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris says yes. She's a pediatrician, founder of the Center for Youth Wellness in Bayview Hunters Point. She studies the effects of adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, in adults. In the 1990s, the CDC and Kaiser Permanente authored a landmark study of more than 17,000 adult patients. It proved that the more ACE types a person experienced as a kid, the worse their health as an adult. And we're not just talking behavioral health, but also physical. Harris built on that research and found childhood stress changes our very brains and neural systems forever. She explains in her new book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. Dr. Harris joined me in studio. First, I asked her about the ACE study and what qualifies as an adverse childhood experience.
Those include physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, or growing up in a household where a parent was mentally ill, substance dependent, incarcerated, where there was parental separation or divorce, or domestic violence. And what they found in this study was pretty amazing. It was a groundbreaking study for two reasons. One was that the first thing that they found was that these ACEs are incredibly common. Mm-hmm. So two-thirds of the folks who participated in their study had experienced at least one ACE, and 1 in 8 folks experienced 4 or more. And since that original study was published, now 32 states in the District of Columbia have collected ACE data at a population level, and they all show numbers very similar to the original Kaiser CDC data. So, you know, between half and two-thirds of the population with at least one ACE, and between 13 and 17% of the population with 4 or more ACEs.
And you mentioned 1 ACE and 4 ACEs, and is that how it's counted? Can you tell us how the research happens?
Yeah, so the way they counted the research was that for every one of these categories that a person endorsed, for everyone they said, oh, yes, that happened to me, right? I experienced that in my childhood. And they were looking from 0 to 18. Then they would get a point on their ACE score.
A point for every ACE you've experienced?
A point for every category.
Right.
So, for
okay.
example, for a person, if they've ever experienced physical abuse, right, then that would be 1 point. If they've ever had a parent who experienced mental illness, right, then that would be another point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then after this research is done, if I, say, have 7 points or 8 points, what does that mean?
So this is the second piece that was so groundbreaking about this research is what they did was they looked at the association between these ACEs and health outcomes. And, you know, I think for a lot of us, it's intuitive that the more experiences like this you have as a kid, the more likely you might be to have problems, say, with mental health or with substance use. And they did find that. That did bear out.
When you grow up.
When you grow up, mm-hmm. yes, in adulthood. So, for example, a person with 4 more ACEs is 4.5 times as likely to experience depression and 7 times as likely to become alcoholic as a person with 0 ACEs.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really striking, which was new, like we'd never heard of this before, was that the higher your ACE score, the higher your risk for health outcomes. You know, things like heart disease. A person with 4 or more ACEs had double the risk as a person with 0 ACEs. For heart disease, it was double the risk. For stroke, it was 2.5 times the risk. For chronic lung disease, it was almost 4 times the risk. And on and on, we saw this increased risk for cancer, double the risk for cancer, 1.5 times the risk of diabetes, 11 times the risk of Alzheimer's. Mm. So when we looked at you know, the 10 leading causes of death, having an ACE score of 4 or more was associated with a significantly increased risk for 7 out of 10 of the leading cause of death.
And what's the explanation for that? Your body changes, your physiology changes somehow.
The part of your brain that's responsible for your fear response, mm-hmm. your amygdala, when it's activated by something scary, it actually sends projections to the part of your brain that's responsible for judgment and executive functioning and impulse control. This is the prefrontal cortex. Mm-hmm. And it turns it way, way down. Because if you're in a forest and there's a bear, you don't want judgment getting in the way of survival, no. right? Mm-mm. And so, and instead what it does is it activates a part of the brain that's known as the noradrenergic nucleus of the locus coeruleus, or as I like to call it, the part of the brain responsible for, I don't know karate, but I do know crazy. This is the within the brain stress response system. Mm. And it's responsible for getting us amped up, mm-hmm. right? So that we are just, you know, brazen enough to fight this bear. Mm-hmm. And the one other thing that happens that's less obvious is that when you activate your stress response, it also activates your immune response, mm. right? It activates your immune system because if that bear gets his claws into you, you want your immune system to be primed to bring inflammation to stabilize the wound so that you can live long enough to either beat that bear or get away. Mm. And so if you think about it, it's actually genius. It was, you know, evolved over a very long period of time to save our lives. But the problem is what happens when that bear comes home every night, mm. right? And this system is activated over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it goes from being adaptive, right, or life-saving, to maladaptive or health-damaging.
So then what happens?
Well,
if it's a recurring thing,
yes.
that bear, for example, that abusive father, right, in
yeah.
the home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what we see is whenever we're in any, you know, it's interesting. I say that it becomes maladaptive, but what happens is we become adapted to situations of high stress and trauma, right? Mm-hmm. So that amygdala alarm that warns us about fear, it becomes overactive, and we can actually see on MRI that kids who have experienced a lot of adversity, their amygdala is actually larger. That part of the mm-hmm. brain is actually larger, and we begin to see danger in sometimes where danger doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Right? We begin to interpret behaviors as scary. So perhaps it isn't the abusive parent whose hand lands on your shoulder, but it's the next time a hand lands on your shoulder, even if it's your teacher trying to help you, tell you to pay attention in class, that activates your fight or flight response. And initially, that immediate reaction is to fight back, hmm. right? In the chart review that I did of my patients, if they had 0 ACEs, only 3% of them were having learning and behavior problems in school. So that the more ACEs our patients had experienced, the more problems that they had had, both health problems and learning and behavior problems. For our kids who had 4 or more ACEs, more than half of them had had learning and behavior problems. And what that meant for me as a doctor is that these patients were being referred to me most often for ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
We see that a lot.
And in the U.S., the number one treatment for ADHD is medication, right. stimulants like Ritalin and Adderall. And but what this research was telling me was that if our kids had 4 more ACEs, they were 32 times as likely to have learning and behavior problems as our kids with 0 ACEs. So maybe the real problem was not that their attentive, the part of their brain that's responsible for attention was under-functioning, in which case it's absolutely right to give a stimulant,
right?
Because you improve that function. But what our data pointed to was that most likely our kids were experiencing toxic doses of adversity mm. that was actually inhibiting the ability of their prefrontal cortex, right, to function because of all of the stress hormones. And if that's the case, you have to reduce the dose of adversity and provide the buffering, caring adult relationships that are necessary to improve executive functioning in those kids.
Mm. So that sounds like it would be hard to do. It sounds like if you are going towards prevention or minimizing these ACEs, that you would be having to go into homes, parenthood, food, neighborhoods. So what are these interventions that you do?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that as a public health researcher and a doctor, it's really important that we get to the root of the problem. Because if we don't get to the root of the problem, even if we patch over the symptoms with medications, we're still, what we're going to see is that we're not effective in solving the problem. And yeah, it's hard work. And yeah, it requires a lot of change. And that's the reason why I wrote The Deepest Well, was so that everyone could be aware. Step one in terms of solutions is raising awareness. We can do it by raising awareness, mm-hmm. doing routine screening. Every pediatrician in America should be screening for adverse childhood experiences.
So when I take my daughters to the pediatrician, we always, you know, we're checking in. We get that form, you know. Is there violence in your home? Does somebody smoke in your... Is that what you're talking about?
That's right. So our center, the Center for Youth Wellness, has developed a screening tool to be able to screen for the adverse childhood experiences factors, mm-hmm. right, in 3 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a de-identified tool. So it's a little different than the one that you're accustomed to filling out, right? Because I think most of us, you know, when I take my kids to the doctor, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we list the 10 adverse childhood experiences categories, and we say, you don't have to tell us which ones your child has experienced, only how many, right?
Uh-huh.
And what that allows us to do is to say, okay, your doctor immediately knows whether the answer is a 0, a 2, a 4, or an 8. And that immediately tells us a sense of what is the risk that your child's body is making a high number of stress hormones that can be affecting their risk of learning and behavior problems, stress hormones, you know, affecting their immune system. And we use that information to do a better job doing diagnosis and treatment.
That's pediatrician Nadine Burke-Harris of the Center for Youth Wellness in Bayview Hunters Point. Her book is The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity.